Good day, and welcome to the County Health Rankings teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question by pressing star and one on your touch-tone phone. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Michelle Larkin. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Michelle Larkin, Assistant Vice President of the Health Group at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And thanks to all of you for taking part in today's teleconference to release the 2013 County Health Rankings. The County Health Rankings began 4 years ago as a partnership between the Foundation and the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, ranking nearly every county in the United States. The rankings build on the work of our colleagues at University of Wisconsin, who started ranking the counties in Wisconsin back in 2003. When we launched this national ranking, we realized the potential of the county health rankings to influence how we think about the health of our communities, and we believed that the rankings would influence how our collective resources, policies, and community decisions are made, and that belief is bearing out. This change has already begun. The rankings are laying the groundwork for efforts by governors, mayors, businesses, and community leaders and citizens across the country to build a culture of health in their states, cities, and neighborhoods. Let me give you just a few examples. Organizations like the United Way, the National Association of Counties, the National Business Coalition on Health, and many more are using the rankings and engaging their local members to make positive changes in their communities. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is currently funding 30 community initiatives across the nation. These partnerships include public health, education groups, policymakers, business leaders, and healthcare. And they are working on policy efforts ranging from improving early childhood literacy and high school graduation rates to promoting fair lending practices to helping help end the cycle of debt for many uninsured and low-income families. And just this past month, I'm thrilled to say that we awarded 6 communities the first RWJF Roadmaps to Health Prize. You'll hear more about the progress in New Orleans from the city's health commissioner, Karen DeSalvo, in a few minutes. And we're confident that the successes in New Orleans and the 5 other prize winners will inspire many more communities to join this journey to create a culture of health across our nation. So today, along with the rankings, we're releasing the call for applications for the 2014 RWJF Roadmaps to Health Prize. You can learn more and apply at www.countyhealthrankings.org. I'm joined today by 2 colleagues who share my passion for better health, Dr. Patrick Remington, co-director of the County Health Rankings and associate dean at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and by Karen DeSalvo, health commissioner for the City of New Orleans. In a moment, Pat will walk us through the 2013 County Health Rankings, telling us what's new in the rankings, and how the rankings have helped to mobilize communities across the country to improve health. And Dr. DeSalvo, who has led a citywide effort to make New Orleans one of the 10 healthiest cities in the U.S. by 2018, will tell us about diverse partnerships and actions that are driving efforts in the Crescent City. Before we begin, I wanted to just take a moment to talk about a few housekeeping notes. I want to let you all know that we're recording this call and it will be available for replay afterward. And after we hear from Dr. Remington and Dr. DeSalvo, we'll open the line for questions. And importantly, I want to remind all of you to go to the countyhealthrankings.org site for information about the health of nearly every county in the nation and what actions you and the community members can take to improve health. It's now my pleasure to turn to Dr. Patrick Remington, co-director of the County Health Rankings and associate dean at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Pat?
Thanks, Michelle. I'm honored to be part of the County Health Rankings team from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I especially want to thank my colleagues at the University of Wisconsin, Bridget Catlin, Angela Russell, Amanda Jovac, and Julie Willems-Van Dyke for all their hard work. We couldn't have done this without them. The County Health Rankings are an easy-to-use, one-stop shopping source for information about the health of our counties, so we can see how the health of where we live compares to other counties in the same state. We all want to live a healthy life, and the rankings show us that things like having a job, a good education,
access to healthy foods, or a safe place to live affect how healthy we are. Counties, cities, and neighborhoods are using the rankings to identify their problems and work together, pooling and targeting their resources collectively to help solve these problems. We've seen that the rankings are changing the conversation about health in communities from one that has been focused mostly on healthcare and treating diseases to one that focuses on how where we live can promote health and prevent diseases. Leaders in public health and healthcare, business, education, and government are all working together with community residents to improve health. While the rankings focus greatly on county-to-county comparisons within a state, they also reveal new national trends. This year, for example, research has shown that child poverty rates have not improved since 2000, now with more than 1 in 5 children living in poverty. The counties with the highest premature death rates and lowest quality of life also have the highest rates of smoking, teen births, and physical inactivity, as well as more preventable hospital stays. And teen birth rates are more than twice as high in the least healthy counties than in the healthiest counties. Given these challenging trends, we're constantly striving to make the rankings better. Each year, we work hard to refine elements of the rankings so they reflect the most current changes in how we live and affect how where we live has an effect on our health. For example, oral health is an important part of overall health. This year, a new measure was added that looks at the availability of dentists in a county. And we know that water quality is important, so we've added a measure on that. We've also made some exciting new changes on our website, countyhealthrankings.org, like the new county-level trend graphs for several measures, including children in poverty, unemployment, and the quality of health care. While the rankings provide us with a way to broaden the conversation about health, the county health roadmaps that Michelle mentioned earlier helps us take action. The roadmaps are bringing people together from all walks of life, teachers, city planners, public health and healthcare providers, and business leaders, so they can develop and implement strategies that improve the overall health of the community. When you visit the website, you'll see the Roadmaps to Health Action Center, where we've provided tools that can help people work together. This includes our What Works for Health, an online tool to find effective policies and programs that can help neighborhoods, towns, and counties. In many places, the rankings and roadmaps are bringing people together from across the community so they can develop and implement strategies that will lead to better health. In a couple of minutes, Health Commissioner DeSalvo will tell us about the exciting changes that are happening in New Orleans. And beyond New Orleans, across the country, there are plenty of other examples, whether it's Mason County, Washington, where partners are working with kids in grades 4 through 8 to get them interested in higher education, or Manistique, Michigan, where neighbors work together to create a farmer's market that's now become the hub of the community and a magnet for more economic development. Communities are beginning to work together for better health. In an effort to boost dismal graduation rates in the city of Baltimore, partners are now working to rebuild schools so children are more engaged, attend class more often, and score higher on tests. In Tennessee, the Public Health Institute has partnered with Chamber of Commerce so that the health and education factors in a community are being included in local economic and community development plans. Each year, more and more people realize that it's all of our responsibility to promote better health. So go to the website, countyhealthrankings.org, and check out how your county is doing and find how you can make your county, city, or neighborhood healthier. And if you need more information, you can click on the button that says Get Help from the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps team. It's now my pleasure to turn the call over to Karen DeSalvo, the Health Commissioner of New Orleans. Karen?
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you, Pat. New Orleans is just thrilled to be included in this conversation today, and I'm sure some people might find it surprising that a city like New Orleans, which isn't always known for health, is now moving in a direction of that. But we are indeed, and I think it's just such a great story of a resilient people who were knocked to their knees in 2005 by Hurricane Katrina, but chose to rebuild. And the story of rebirth is also really a story of a social movement that that has led to the creation of fundamentals that are going to help us become that healthy city we want to be in 2018, which is, by the way, the 300th anniversary of the city of New Orleans. We decided very early that becoming a city of peace and prosperity, that we needed to be also a healthy city, and that historically we had not been. We also recognized that we wanted to make sure that whatever changes we made were systematic, that they were part of the built environment, that we made durable policy change, that we built capacity, all of that to the end of really creating a culture of health for our city and do that together as a community, thinking about the notion of collective impact. So we clearly recognize that health is more than getting people to a doctor and that really health is largely about where you live, learn, work, and play. We had some clear early needs in the system to make sure that people had better access to health so they didn't delay care or end up using hospital-based care when unnecessary. So, for example, some of the evolution that we have been able to track in the county health rankings is our improvements to health that we relate to system changes in our primary care infrastructure, which is a new network of clinics that we developed after Hurricane Katrina to take care of everybody irrespective of ability to pay in our city. There are changes reflective of the systematic changes that we have implemented in our school system. Over 85% of our kids are now in charter schools, and those charter schools are innovative and creative, just like the primary care network is, and are thinking broadly about not just education, but about how to teach health early so that those habits become part of a child's life well into the future. We have been working to do all of this really as a broad community. The city government's role is to facilitate link and leverage and to be that convener that brings everyone together so that we can easily build synergy but also identify gaps and then create whatever we need to with respect to policy or systems or environment so we can keep moving us towards that big goal of being a healthy city. I think if I were to say what has worked for us broadly, before I give you some examples, it would be that we have used partnerships and used them we have used them in a variety of ways, but in particular the notion of a public-private partnership has been quite successful for us in New Orleans. That means that we bring the best of everybody to the table and have an opportunity to really leverage the resources at our disposal. We have been thinking in a cross-sector way for the last 7.5 years, some of that out of necessity. And when you're building an entire city, it's pretty crystal clear that you can't just think about reforming healthcare education because you have to attend to housing and roads and parks and playgrounds and the rest of the infrastructure, including public safety. And we have leaned heavily on the youth in our community, and the youth have a strong voice in our future and our rebuilding. It is their future, honestly, and so they should really have a chance in shaping it, and they have been great partners in this effort as well. Just a couple of examples of things that we have done. I mentioned from a system standpoint that we made a decision that we were going to not go back to relying on hospital-based care because we wanted to really improve the health of the population with respect to identifying disease earlier, stop treating the consequences of diabetes when people landed in the ICU, but really begin to prevent it on the front end. And our primary care infrastructure that takes care of now 20% of the New Orleans population and has been receiving accolades for its really forward-leaning work is one example of that. It's a huge partnership that includes 25 organizations just delivering the primary care and mental health together, not to mention all of the others that have come together to make sure that that system is successful. Our school system is another example of a system-level change where we very deliberately set out a focus that we wanted to reduce the gap in achievement based upon racial and economic lines, and that we wanted to really make certain that parents and kids had more choice and opportunity for innovation and better education. So our charter school movement has taken off, and you can see that in some of our improvements in educational attainment in the city. Environmentally, we have been thoughtful about place-based development as we are building new or replacing schools or community centers or recreation centers. We think about that map literally and who is going to live, learn, work, and play in that area and how we can create as much synergy as possible between the pieces of infrastructure we put in place. Make sure that, for example, in New Orleans East, we're not just thinking about building a hospital, but we're recognizing that it needs to be walkable to the regional park, Joe Brown, that's just across the street, and that the new library is accessible to everybody, and there's shared programming for at work that we're doing to improve health of the community. We have been, as we lay down new roads in the city, thoughtful about making certain there's access to biking and complete streets. We have a complete streets policy in our city, and have achieved a bronze level designation as a bikeable city, and are well on our way to enhancing both of those so that kids can actually walk to school and families can have other choices for transportation besides their car. And, you know, in our policy world, we have been attending to things such as vending machine policy and doing that not just at the school level or the city government level or the recreation department level, but actually doing it legislatively so that there are expectations that are in the law about what foods kids have access to in schools. And we're mirroring that in our playgrounds and our recreation centers. Similarly, we have mandated physical education in schools, and at the system level, children have led an effort in this group called Kids Rethink New Orleans to change the food available to them on a daily basis that's served by Aramark. They had their contract change, and programs like the Edible Schoolyard, where children grow their food and actually learn how to cook it and use that as part of their curriculum to enhance their educational opportunity. And then an enormous amount of really exciting work to build capacity for things like coaches to work in those playgrounds or those schools, or develop after-school programs and really make sure that there is no gap for children who want to stay fit, whether that's nutritionally or physically. The way that we are tying all this together, particularly around the nutritional physical fitness, is through a program called FitNola, which is a partnership that includes about 130 organizations from small neighborhood groups to Fortune 500 companies. We come together on a regular basis, and we have developed a blueprint that leads to this this goal of being a top 10 fit city by 2018, and are doing that through the effort of collective action. Everybody takes a piece, and we do some things together where it makes sense. And I have to share with you on a personal note, having been in New Orleans for about 25 years, it is just a really exciting and joyous time down here. The numbers that you see in the county health rankings do tell a story about systematic change and making progress when you really focus on environment and policy and systems. But what we're feeling on the ground is real cultural change. And the kinds of conversations that we engage in, the expectations that the community has of me as a health commissioner, of the mayor, is that we are really thinking about health in all policies, and that we are creating that as that intermediary to be in the city that we all live in. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you, Pat. Now, we're going to open up the call to questions, so I'm going to turn it over to the operator who will help us triage.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. Again, star and one to ask a question. We'll pause a moment to allow questions to enter the queue. We'll go first to the side of Molly Durkin with the York Dispatch. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, this is Molly. So I'm from York County. So I guess my question is, I'm looking over the data right now, and York is like very last when it comes to sexually transmitted infections. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about your process. I understand that that is a measure of chlamydia.
Yes, this is Pat Remington. Since there are 30 measures up on the website, we don't put all the details on that front page. If you go to the website, you can learn more about the data, and then actually click through to the actual measures, and on a page we provide the details on specifically how each measure is collected. So I recommend that you go there. I can look to my computer and actually walk through that if you'd like. What those measures, and why it's important to understand where the data come from, is that the communicable disease data are reported from physicians, often laboratory-based reporting. States have different systems so that you can really compare this measure of STIs, chlamydia, for example, between other counties in your state, but it's more challenging to compare across states. Some states have very active surveillance systems, and then other states don't have as active a system. So, again, go to the website, go to the part that describes where the measures come from, and then this is another good example of a measure that is comparable within the state, but hard to make comparisons across to other states. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
We'll go next to Susan Spencer with Worcester Telegram. Go ahead,
Hi, it's the Worcester Telegram and Gazette in Massachusetts. We're in central Massachusetts. Looking at the Massachusetts four counties, there was nothing surprising in the rankings because it tracked very closely to socioeconomic and cultural statuses. I mean, the healthiest county in Massachusetts is Martha's Vineyard, and the least healthy county is the one that Hampton County, which has the city of Springfield, which has a wonderful health center, an academic health center, but it also has a very large Hispanic population and very low income. And I was wondering, I mean, it was great to hear from New Orleans about how low-income communities are working on non-healthcare resource factors that affect health. But I was wondering if you had any other examples of how, you know, it really seems to be a socioeconomic issue as opposed to access to healthcare in Massachusetts, because, you know, the cities with the best, you know, the Harvard teaching hospitals weren't necessarily the highest health factor communities. The lifestyle and economic issues.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. I mean, the thing that's great about the rankings is it puts together healthcare, health behaviors like tobacco use, sexually transmitted infections, obesity rates, but it also looks at those socioeconomic factors, employment rates, high school graduation rates, the percentage of children living in poverty. These are all things that that impact our health and influence how healthy we are. I think some of the stories that we're hearing from counties across the country who have similar challenges to Hampden County, which is where I grew up, we are seeing that engaging communities in a meaningful conversation and using the rankings as a common language, as a place to start, allows that community to come together and to look at where their most pressing needs are. So if it's children living in poverty, which is a big issue for Hampden County, what do we need to be doing differently? How do our educators, how do our faith leaders, and how do our business leaders come together to tackle this challenge? We have some great stories of in Fall River, actually, where they're actually bringing together their youth to think about education, early childhood literacy, healthcare, and employment, and how all of those pieces come together. So Massachusetts also has some great examples in Cambridge, two of our prize-winning communities for the Roadmaps to Health Prize this past in 2013. And I think there's some great lessons there that can be transferred. The other thing I'll say about county-to-county comparisons within the state, that allows you to see that neighboring counties sometimes are doing very well and others are doing quite poorly. So it also allows that county leadership and citizens in those counties to come together and say, why is that county doing so much better than we are? What's working for them, and what do we need to be doing differently, and where are the lessons learned, which I think Karen's stories about New Orleans shows how we can actually learn from people from neighboring counties.
If I could just add a couple of things to this, you're exactly right that it's about where you live, learn, work, and play. But if your child and your asthma is not controlled because you don't have access to care, you can't go to school and learn, which means that you're going to have impaired economic opportunity, which, you know, affects everything else in your life. And so you kind of have to, each city has to unpack this for themselves and decide where they think the key levers are. And as I mentioned, for us, it was about, it needed to be about access to care and about education early. But our indicators, it's clear to me as commissioner that we have a lot of need in our socioeconomic area, childhood poverty being one example of that. Over time, as our educational system improves and our workforce is healthier, and as we continue to build in a new innovation economy and attract more industry, those things will improve. But those indicators may take a little bit longer. Structurally, what this has told us in the city, and what this affirms for us this year's rankings, is that we don't have a way to convene around human and social services in our county. The city is conterminous with our county. And so in addition to having a health department, we're working to expand this into health and human services, because it's not that we're going to do all the services as the government, but it does mean that there's not enough conversation and connection and facilitation between the various efforts that are going on, and it's really hard to know how to make improvement if you don't know what you have in hand to work with, and if that cohort of folks is not working with other sectors to think about what changes need to happen systematically and environmentally and from a policy standpoint to drive those health indicators into a better place.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go next to the side of Laura Maggie with the Times-Picayune. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi, this is Laura Maggie with the Times-Picayune. This is a question for Dr. DeSalvo, for the paper in New Orleans. And have you looked at sort of this year's stats compared to, I guess, previous years? I mean, it seems like the parish has sort of risen up compared to other parishes in the state, but then a lot of the sort of indicators don't necessarily show an improvement, you know, in terms of, you know, the level of insurance of people in New Orleans, or childhood poverty, you know, I guess some of the morbidity indicators like poor or fair health.
Hi, Laura. Yeah, I have. The data is most meaningful if I can follow trends and begin to see what, you know, where we think we're making a difference and where there needs more change. So we have risen what I consider to be pretty significantly from 60th out of 64 parishes to 48. Some of that improvement is in areas where we have been focusing systemically, so clinical care, for example. We do have some decline in the uninsured, and as you're very aware, for people below 200% federal poverty level, our primary care insurance program called NOCI makes that a de facto 10% rate, because they actually do have access to primary care for some period of time. It may come to an end, but we don't need to get into that today. There's some change there. People are getting more of their diabetic screening, their mammography. We have reduction in our preventable hospital days. Those are all peripheral indicators of better access to primary care, basically. And we have good primary care similarly with some of the school indicators. But some of the physical environment indicators continue to improve. And again, that is a very focused, directed policy level decision that this community made and that the government is working with them on to see that we have more green space and more access to opportunities to be physically active outdoors, safe spaces. We have big challenges in some areas, particularly some of the socioeconomic areas where we haven't made a lot of dents, like children in single households, like people reporting adequate social support, poverty, unemployment rates. On the other hand, you know, I would say that some areas, such as the number of poor physical health days, they've declined a little. The mental health days have increased some, but you are well aware that in this community, one of the things that we've been doing the last couple of years is working really hard to increase awareness of things like mental health issues, so that the community, so we begin to destigmatize and they're willing to report and seek services. I know that we have a major burden of mental health in the community. We work on that pretty intensively, and I'm a little less concerned about it. I don't want to get wonky, but I think that that's a good opportunity for us to make sure that people are thinking about it and moving in the right direction. So, summary overall, we are moving in the right direction broadly. I see in this that we've made as a community system changes that are having an impact, but we also have a lot of work to do, especially with some of the socioeconomic and then in some of the other key indicators.
And again, star and one to ask a question. We'll go next to the side of Dan Childs with ABC News. Go ahead, your line's open. Mr. Childs, your line is open. We'll come back to Mr. Childs. We'll go next to the side of Eric Chu with Flint Journal. Go ahead, your line's open.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. I have a question specifically for Ms. DeSalvo. You briefly touched on this earlier with the reporter from, I believe, the Times-Picayune, but as a reporter from a newspaper in Genesee County in Flint, obviously, in this year's rankings, Genesee County is ranked in the bottom third. I believe it's 80th out of 82nd of all counties in Michigan. And obviously, the outreach work you've done in New Orleans has some obvious infrastructure in community outreach differences versus a county such as Genesee County and Flint, obviously. But in terms of outreach in health improvement and the initiatives, basically, what outreach efforts are possible both within the traditional healthcare system and in terms of community outreach that could possibly improve Flint and Genesee County's rankings for next year?
Thanks for the question. I think I'd start by talking about this word outreach, because the way we have approached this in New Orleans is not about outreach as much as it is about being a social movement. The community, so I've been health commissioner now for 2 years, and I was a part of that very active community that was really focused on improving health before I became a part of the municipal government. And so I speak from firsthand experience that this is this idea that we want to be a city of not just a city of health, but one of peace and prosperity, is owned by the community. And we made a very concerted decision that we were going to move in that direction, that we were not going to rebuild the city that we had, but that we were going to build better. And worked step by step to put in the systems and infrastructure that were necessary to make that work. The role of government in this, with the leadership that we have in Mayor Landrieu, who understands the social determinants of health, is to make certain that we are doing our part as government from the standpoint of rebuilding the infrastructure and being thoughtful about building health into those decisions, but also that we, because we are accountable to everyone, I've been known to say it's the public's health, and so I work for everyone. And so because I'm accountable to all of them, I have an important role of convening the various stakeholders to make sure that we are using all of our resources wisely, because there's not a lot to go around, as you know, in Flint, and that we are as creative and innovative and thoughtful about reaching everybody in an equitable fashion, but really getting as much impact as we can. And we have to do that collectively. And so there are so many ways that we have brought together groups, you know, an after-school running group like Youth Run NOLA, which is a startup, you know, not-for-profit, but that needed equipment, you know, big corporation, Nike, willing to donate some shoes, and those kids can run. And it's not just a running program, it's a self-esteem program. And now that same program is working with our local library to expand the reach of what they can do after hours and on weekends, because that's a safe place, and now they can begin to help mentor those kids around their schoolwork and not just around self-esteem and running. So we have seen all these things grow, but it's not because we're, as a city, directing that and outreaching it. It's because it's happening and we're facilitating it. We're supporting it. We're incubating it where necessary. And so what I encourage all communities to do is to get their head around this idea that, especially from the public health standpoint, that they need to work in that direction. I'll say a word about medical and then I'll stop. I came from the medical world. I'm a physician and I was in the School of Medicine, and I think our view on public health is an expected model, but what we have in the medical world is data. It's a big data resource, and it's also a bully pulpit for the patients who come through the doors, and they tend to be those who are in real need, especially families in distress or people with chronic disease. And so the opportunity for public health and the medical system to work together is right in front of us. I think that data is going to help it. And the more that the healthcare system can understand that health is more than getting people to a doctor, it's about where you live, learn, work, and play. But on the other hand, that public health understands that the medical world has so much to bear with respect to communication and resources, I think it's a great partnership. And we are doing that in a few ways in the city, which I won't get into, but if you wanted to, you know, follow up with me later, I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go back to the side of Dan Childs. Dan, your line's open.
Hi, this is Ajanta Patel. I work with Dan Childs at ABC News. I was wondering if you could go over how the data was collected a little bit and how you produced the analysis. And also, if you could talk a little about, were there any surprises when you looked at the data? I think it's not maybe shocking to some of us who have lived in big cities that it's hard to get around and be outside. But if you could talk about what maybe was surprising and not maybe as obvious as, you know, a destitute community may not have resources, something like that.
Sure, great question. So, one of the, I think, best parts of the county health rankings is that we take data that are collected in different information systems. Those tend to be silos and often don't talk to one another. So we collect death data from vital statistics, also rates of low birth weight and teen pregnancies. We collect data from the behavioral risk factor surveillance system. That's a nationwide telephone survey that collects information on obesity rates, smoking, and actually measures of quality of life. But we don't stop there. We go to criminal justice records, education records. We go to census. We go to healthcare data from Medicare, and the list goes on. So we pull all these measures together, and then what we do within each state, we look at the measure and we graph them from high to low and look at how they rank within each measure. And then we weight them to come up with summary measures for four categories of health factors: health behaviors, clinical care, social and economic factors, and then the built environment. And then we summarize those into an overall summary measure. So it's a model for health, just like an individual. If you went in and you had your blood pressure and cholesterol and heart rate and all those things, you could come up and the doctor might say, well, overall, you know, you're in pretty good health or not in such good health. This is a way to have an overall measure of today's health, which are those health outcomes, the length and quality of life, and then the factors that will influence and that will affect the health down the road. So I think, to me, I've been looking at data for many, many years, and typically what we focus on is specific numbers like lung cancer rates or smoking rates. What is so important here is that we've put it all together into a snapshot of the overall health of places. But it's surprising that there isn't really one picture of health. That, you know, you look at New Orleans and you might say, well, that's got a certain health profile, but it's probably dramatically different than other urban areas. It might have better air quality, but not as good a school system. So what it does mean is that to find out about the health of your community, you need to start with an overall view. How do we rank? You know, what's our rank for health outcomes? And then begin to dig down and say, what factors are pulling us down that we could work on, and where are our strengths and, you know, where we rank a little better? We will look for trends over time. I think, you know, Karen's point that trends are really important. It shows you, you know, where you're not making progress and where you are. We need to put more emphasis on that. We've got small little graphs that show the trends on the website. But we need to do a better job of communicating that, like with a dashboard to say, you know, green light if you're going in the right direction, yellow with caution, and red and going in the wrong direction. The data are there. Communities can pull that out and look at the specific measures. But in the future, I think as more and more people understand where they are now, they'll be asking about, you know, how have they been progressing.
I would just add, this is Michelle Larkin, that one of the things that was most striking for me is that the gap between the healthiest counties and the unhealthiest counties continues, and that, you know, your premature death rates are, you're two times as likely to die prematurely as if you live in an unhealthy county. So that fact that we may be improving and doing better, but we still have a lot of work to do to close that gap. The last thing I'll say that I think I've heard, this is our fourth year doing it, what I've heard from counties across the country is that people are really struck about the level of children that are living in poverty and how poorly they're doing on their education of youth because we know that both of those are very much connected to living long, healthy, productive lives. And so what the rankings does is really calls out that we need to pay more attention to those early years and making sure that we're getting kids out of poverty and that we're making sure that they get a good education.
Thank you.
We'll go next to the side of Jennifer Lubell with American Medical News. Go ahead, your line's open.
Thank you. Could you give me a sense of where exactly these healthiest counties in the country are versus the unhealthiest counties? And also, when you say that the residents living in healthier counties are 1.4 times more likely to have access to a doctor than those in the least healthy counties, has that number gone up or down over the years? Has it, you know, changed? Does it seem like access in the least healthy counties is becoming worse, and perhaps the health reform law may have an impact on that? Thanks.
So I'll just answer, this is Pat Remington, I'll answer the first question. We do see patterns across the country. First of all, if you're interested in how healthy your state is, that's available on the America's Health Rankings website. That ranks states from 1 to 50. I think the last year Vermont was the healthiest state in the nation, and Mississippi and Louisiana tied for last. But when you dig down within each state, what you'll find is that there's as much variability, as Michelle said, within Mississippi as there is within Vermont or Wisconsin or any other state. And the patterns we see are pretty typical in that urban metropolitan areas tend to have worse health. The suburban, the ring communities of metropolitan areas tend to be at the top of the list. Oftentimes, they're the healthiest. In Wisconsin, Milwaukee is second to last, and the two suburban communities are number one and number two in health. And then the other thing you see is rural areas. There's a lot of variability in the smaller rural communities. Some rural communities have good educational systems, sound economy, good health care, and healthy behaviors. And so they rank near the top. And many of our rural communities in Wisconsin are in the top tier. But almost right next door, you'll find a rural community that is at the bottom of the list. And invariably, when you look, they have high rates of unemployment, kids in poverty, high rates of substance abuse, and all the things that would lead to an unhealthy community. So, again, these patterns do emerge, but just as we, you know, recommend people think about patterns, that then you'll look at a city and you'll say, well, here's an urban area that is healthier than you might think. And so what is it in that community that leads to better health outcomes?
Yeah, I think New Orleans is a great example of that, where they're putting the pieces in place and they're seeing change happen. You asked a question about healthcare. I think the thing that the rankings demonstrates is that healthcare and access to a primary care physician and good quality care and having insurance is important, but that much of what matters to our health and influences our health, it really happens outside of the medical care system. It has to do with employment, it has to do with education, it has to do with poverty, and it has to do with individual behaviors around smoking, exercise, and eating. So it's just a way to make sure that we raise the attention to those issues as well, which seem to have more to do with our health than whether or not we can access a provider.
Yeah, I think Michelle brings up a good point. Oftentimes, I forgot to mention that the other pattern we see in an urban community is that they often have major medical centers. And when you look down at the health factors, you'll see ranking at the bottom on health behaviors, at the bottom on social and economic factors and the built environment. But then, not atypically, you'll see that they rank in the top 10 in access and quality of health care, that, you know, right out their back door, these large medical centers and healthcare systems are providing care. It's a great example that despite ranking pretty well, these health systems, like in the Kansas City, Wyandotte County, home of a major medical center, it's not producing the health outcomes that it could if it engaged, as Karen said, in infrastructure and systems in the community, that without sound educational systems, a well-built environment, and, you know, good what I call foundations for health, that healthcare is not going to do it alone. It's important, obviously, to have access to good quality healthcare, but if you look at some of these urban areas that have rank pretty well, look at the overall health. It's not going to be as high as it could be if it doesn't have good rankings in those other factors.
What is the healthiest county in the United States?
Well, we don't rank counties across states, because if we did, what we would find every year is that the story is about that one county, and perhaps a county at the end of the least healthy place, and the national news would be focused on two places in the nation. We like to bring this discussion and argument about who's healthiest and who's not down to the state and actually community level. So when you search the internet today, you will see stories in newspapers from community to community talking about their community. And we actually saw that happen 3 years ago when a story came out ranking counties nationally. There was a little bit of attention to it. Maybe it was a community in Mississippi and a community in Colorado at the top and the bottom of that list. But then when the county health rankings come out, by changing our lens, really focusing on states, we bring the discussion within state to state. So I can tell you in my community, Dane County is much more interested in how it compares to other counties in Wisconsin than to Vermont, Washington or Mississippi.
We'll go next to the side of Richard Merritt with the Public Health Commission. Go ahead, your line's open.
Thank you. I'm calling from Alexandria, Virginia. And my question is that given the recent CDC studies that show the extent of secondhand smoke penetration in multi-unit residential facilities and families and apartments that have no smoking policies, and the American Academy of Pediatrics estimates that 18% of kids 3 to 18 are exposed to secondhand smoke on a regular basis. I'm asking because in your health factors under adult smoking, you mention under what works for health policies and programs for tobacco use, you mention eliminating or reducing secondhand smoke exposure. You mentioned that several times. So my question is there any thinking about developing an indicator for secondhand smoke exposure for future county health rankings?
Well, it's a great question. It points out that the rankings have had about 30 measures for the decade we've been doing it in Wisconsin and now 4 years nationally. We could build this easily to 150 measures, but we don't. We try and keep the model, what we call it, parsimonious, so that it's simple to talk about. Communities can begin a discussion, but then what we do is in almost every state with every county, you can link to your state health systems. And many states have measures of exposure to passive smoke. That has to be collected on usually a different type of survey. So it is a very important issue. We only measure adult smoking, but don't get into the details of what you'd need if you were going to address that problem. So it's a great question. A community could have a relatively low rate of smoking, but there could be great disparities, high rates in low-income populations, and particularly kids exposed in Section 8 housing that doesn't have policies on this. And if you've ever received a call from somebody working in or living in a home that fills with cigarette smoke from one of their neighbors, it's really a sad situation and one that policies, that's a low cost approach, policy can address this issue. And I really think it's the next area of policies that are going to be seen around the country.
We'll go next to the site of Susan Kunferman with Wood County Health Department. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, thank you. While I was in the queue, I did find the answer to one of my questions, which was if there is a nice synopsis of the changes from 2012 to 2013, and I was able to find that on the website. Another question I have is about trending, and I think this was mentioned a little bit earlier in the conference call, but I'm wondering if there's any place where counties can see within the website our trends from like 2010, 11, 12, 13. All of the data is there, and I've been putting it together myself, but I'm wondering if there's anything available within the County Health Rankings website that would show our trends.
This is Pat Remington. Susan, good to hear from you. Yes, if you go to Wisconsin and you click on Wood County, you'll see in the upper left-hand corner a number that is says 2013. And if you just click on that that window, you'll see 2010, 11, 12, and 13. And you can just scroll through and see how the ranks have changed. One of the reasons, although this is the fourth year we've been doing this, one of the reasons we don't make a big deal about changes in ranks is that it's probably too early to see changes in death rates and quality of life that are meaningful. Your county's pretty small population, so the rank change, especially if it's ranked in the middle of the state, Wood County is ranked, right in the middle of the ranking, sort of in the 19 to 36 range. And so I think, you may see a consistent trend, and perhaps after 5 years, if that trend is in the same direction, that might reflect that Wood County is getting better relative to the other 72 counties. But for the most part, those changes of less than five ranks might just be variability, particularly in smaller communities. But as Karen said, in New Orleans, and we hear from around the country, that people are really interested in change. And so we did put the trend maps up. Looking at Wood County, your premature mortality rates are better than the state and better than the U.S. and seem to be going down slightly. So that absolute measure, I think, is good news, even if the rank isn't changing over time. So there's lots of ways to look at trends, individual measures, look at our trend graphs, and then I think last, see if the rank is changing, and if you're a bigger community with more stable estimates, that might actually be a meaningful change of you getting better or worse compared to the rest of the counties.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
And we have time for one last question. It's from the site of Del Myers with the Salinas Saline County Health Department. Go ahead, your line is open.
Thank you. The lady from Wood County asked actually a couple of my questions, and I was really glad to hear answers on those. Do you combine multiple years of data sometimes to get the rankings on, like, smaller counties?
Again, this is Pat Remington. These are data questions, so I'll take a stab at it. When you go to find out more about the data and go to the data sheets, you'll find one that summarizes every measure. And yes, for all counties, we combine the same number of years. For example, the behavioral risk factor surveillance system, smoking rates, obesity rates, we look at 7 years and add them together. Mortality rates are combined from 3 years. Some of the data aren't as new as we'd like. They're most recently available, but sometimes it takes several years to get them to be publicly available. So look at each measure. Each measure is a different number of years, but we do combine them to provide more certain, more stable estimates. The important thing, though, if you're a county like in New Orleans where you have a large population, is that 7-year estimate, you probably have individual year data that could be used to look at trends so that each community can decide whether you take the number in the county health rankings, or you dig deeper and say, well, what is my mortality rate this year? Not the 3-year average that's in the rankings, but I want to know how the last 3 years have gone. And again, very small communities have trouble looking at trends for some of these measures, but the larger the community, the more likely you are to be able to look at year-to-year data. But again, watch out, because when you get into the data, you'll notice that to provide the best estimates for up to 3,000 counties across the nation, we often combine multiple years of data.
Okay, that's great. Our local county just compiled a community health assessment, and so we've got tens and tens of data on that, so I'm going to be real interested to kind of see how the county health rankings incorporate into what we did and what measures you used and we used. And in the state has a KansasHealthMatters.org website that has tens of data on it, too. And so I'm just really interested to see. I bet you there's some pretty good correlation between all of those. But our local one is just real pretty recent.
Thanks. Yeah, Kansas has been doing a great job with looking at their local measures around health and how they can work to improve it.
Yeah, we begged for years and years to get county-level data. And I guess my other question is, right now we're in the phase where we're soliciting public input to help us determine the one or two priorities that we'll try to focus on in our county. And it sounds like New Orleans did tons of stuff. They addressed a lot of issues at the same time. And my question is, do you have guidance on the website kind of about how to do that kind of organization?
Well, I'll start, and then maybe Karen will add in specifically about New Orleans. We do have a whole section on the countyhealthrankings.org website around what works and how, if you're an individual, an educator, policymaker, or a mom belonging to the PTA, what role you can take to actually use the rankings to stimulate a conversation in your community and move to action. So how you go about doing that prioritization and what steps you can take to raise interest and to actually get people moving in the same direction. Karen, I don't know if you wanted to talk specifically about anything that y'all did in New Orleans.
Sure. I would direct you to our website, which is NOLA.gov/health, and on there is a report about FitNOLA. I think that is a great example of how we brought community together around an idea and created a shared community vision to be top 10 healthiest city by 2018, set out a blueprint that thinks about sectors and have the community members leading those initiatives and a steering committee and youth involved in that, but also have regular opportunity for convening so that there can be networking, et cetera. And then in between, there's a lot of work that my team does to continue linking programs, to continue building the asset map and pushing out information about what's available and what's coming. So that's the FitNOLA effort. And it started, it started pretty small. We had a small grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to pull together folks to start talking about childhood obesity. We invited, the first, what we thought we knew, which was about 30 organizations, and before we knew it, we had 140 who wanted to come, and our next event is this Friday, and we have yet another 130 organizations that plan to come for the half day to talk about successes, what's happening with respect to new projects that we're doing together, and then where we want to go in the next few months. So it's been an ongoing effort, but it started really with just a simple idea of bringing people together to create a shared vision, to create a framework about our collective action, and it was extremely collaborative. Big tent, everybody come, and everybody keeps coming, which is really exciting because the ownership of it into the future is going to be actually the community as we begin to make that real culture change. But again, you can find me also through the website if you want to talk a bit afterwards. Be happy to do that too.
Okay, and were most of your people that were working on the initiative, were they more volunteers or were they more employed, professionals kind of in that particular area?
Volunteers.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you guys so much, and I love the county health rankings every year.
Thank you.
And we'll turn it back over to Michelle Larkin to close the call.
So thank you, everyone, for your time and your questions. We do want to continue this conversation beyond today's call and hear from you and other people in your communities about how you're using the rankings to improve health. We want to know who you're working with, what strategies you've planned, what's working well, where you're seeing successes, and what challenges you're facing to really understand and get those stories about how you're engaging your community members to improve health. And there are a number of ways that you can do this. First, you can go to countyhealthrankings.org, where you can first and foremost learn how your county ranks, learn about what works to improve health, build your own roadmap to health, and then share how you're working to improve your county's health. You can also learn more at that site about the new RWJF Roadmaps to Health Prize. The prize recognizes communities for the progress they've made towards becoming healthier places to live, learn, work, and play. And I do want to stress that it, for those prizes, doesn't matter if you're at the top of the rank or at the bottom of the rank. What matters is that you are actually making progress towards health, and will award up to six communities each a $25,000 cash prize in 2014. So please do go and put in your applications for that prize. You can also join a Twitter conversation today. It will be a Twitter Q&A with Pat Remington and RWJF President and CEO Risa Lavizzo-More. That's this afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Submit your questions to at @RWJF_pubhealth or at CHRankings and follow the conversation at #HealthRankings. I do encourage you to regularly follow newpublichealth.org, which is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's premier online forum for interviews with thought leaders and news, and also new ideas for ways to improve health across education, housing, employment, health behaviors, and health care. So again, thanks to all of you for joining our call today. It's so gratifying to see that all of you recognize how health is influenced by where we live, learn, work, and play. And we look forward to hearing more about what you're doing to make your communities healthier and to create that culture of health for our nation. Thank you so much.